And why do you think investment in potato and wheat stocks is a lucrative market right now?
Well, in this 21st century of trading environment, it's about the weight and kudos of your assets, the fluxmication, if you will, and no one else has anything like it. The marriage of the ISPS and the ESPN with these stocks is like no other currently available.
My apologies, Mr. Arthur, I'm going to have to interrupt you there, as we have reports coming in of a major bridge collapse. We should be crossing over live to our correspondent, who is on the scene right now. Storm Petrel, what's the situation down there?
Well, Chris, some unprecedented events have unfolded over the last few hours as the bridge connecting the exclusive Locust Island resort to the mainland has undergone major structural failure. The resort is home to the Endpoint 5-star hotel and the derelict Grasshopper Jazz Club. Eyewitness reports say that a group of around 70 huge feathered creatures with strange comb-like appendages like nothing on heaven or earth were seen fleeing the scene. More updates will be provided over the next hour as the local business owners come to terms with what's happened and pick up the pieces. Although not literally.
Storm Petrel, thank you. And now, the weather.
Hello there.
It's looking like an unsettled outlook for the week ahead, with a high chance of rain, and an even higher chance of another episode of Slap the Chicken. We should see some talk of the weather throughout the course of the next few hours, with a low-pressure system of utter nonsense sweeping in from the west. Clouds should clear and reveal some sort of signs related to the weather, and we may see a few spots of mediocre music playing here and there. Highs of Graham's number, lows overnight of absolute zero. Take care.
Security! Oh, no! Security!
Feel like life's wearing you down and nothing rocks your world anymore? Well, you may need a healthy dose of the science of erosion and weathering, especially when we have an entire 5-star hotel to do it in. There's no place like the Endpoint. Weathering and erosion are two different things. Whilst erosion is the carrying away of rock or material that has managed to break free, such as Freddie Mercury, weathering is the actual process by which the rock can break down. Ways in which this can happen can be broadly categorised as mechanical, chemical, or a few hard-hitting therapy sessions. Mechanical weathering processes involve some force splitting the rock apart, as opposed to some chemical reaction causing the rock to disintegrate. The potted plant on the cracked tiles of this hotel foyer should provide a good starting point. See how the roots are starting to creep through the ceramic out to the bottom of the pot and widening the cracks. Since water expands when it freezes, if there were to be some water in the crack and the temperature were to drop, the ice would widen the crack. As the temperature goes up and down, the ice freezes and thaws, widening the cracks until it breaks in the inventively named process of freeze-thaw-weathering. The more ice there is, the more likely the rock is to break, just as the more ice you have in your wrist pushes you to breaking points, as money is not the only source of happiness. We live in a society. It gets even worse when the water is salty. If you ever end up in a very hot spot pouring salt water into a crack, you may notice that over time the water evaporates, leaving a salty residue. The salt crystals the residue consists of grow larger as the temperature gets higher, pushing the crack wider open. This process is called haloclasty, and it may also occur in areas where salt water isn't available. Depending on the type of rock, fresh water may react with dissolved rock pieces and become saline. This process leaves the rock face peppered with holes like a giant loofah or the product of an overenthusiastic Swiss cheesemaker. Disclaimer. I do not care who or what puts the holes in Swiss cheese. It's not someone from Britain, because we import 2/3 of our cheese. And that is a disgrace. How about chemical weathering? Combining carbon dioxide with water sometimes forms carbonic acid. Although this acid is quite weak, carbonic acid is more than strong enough to dissolve limestone and other such chalky rocks. When this weathering process gets very busy on a large expanse of limestone, you end up with a landscape called karst. This is named after an area near the border between Slovenia and Italy, from an old Slovenian word for rock, which is a bit like deciding every mountain range in the world is called an Andes. A karst is a higgledy-piggledy limestone landscape made up of tall towers, caves, sinkholes, and underground rivers. Exciting stuff. What does weathering leave behind? Well, quartz, gypsum, and clay are all byproducts of chemical weathering processes. You also get some lovely geographical features such as inselbergs. Inselbergs are lonely isolated rocks, which look like an island surrounded by a flat plain. Examples include Uluru in Australia and Mount Monadnock in New Hampshire, which sometimes lends its name to be used as a synonym to inselberg. Inselbergs appear because the island is made of rock which is less prone to the most prevalent weathering process in that area. Speaking of the landscape, we can get a better view from the rooftop if we take the lift up. I have it on good authority that there may be a party there tonight. Here we are. Doesn't look like much now, but there should be 70 other guests here in a minute or so. Now, when you stare at the clouds in the sky, isn't it exciting? No? Please yourself. Maybe you'll change your mind after our next conveniently placed segment on clouds. Clouds are underrated. Have you thought about how much water there is just floating up there in the form of millions of little droplets? Clouds can quite often be a cubic kilometre in size, and taking their volume and average density into account, the mass of the cloud can be determined. And that mass is about 500 metric tons. Picture about 491 1996 Honda Civics just up there. However, the average density of a Honda Civic is a lot greater than the density of air. The average density of a cloud is a lot less than the density of air, which is why the cloud floats and a Honda Civic shouldn't. What is that over there? The reason why rain clouds are grey is because the density of water droplets within them is very high. This means that sunlight can't pass through the cloud as easily, meaning that the cloud looks darker. Sunlight also has no opportunity to sneak around the side, because the cloud cover is usually too heavy. If you're interested, cloud cover is measured in octaves. One octave is 1/8 of the sky covered, and it keeps going up in eighths until you reach 8 octaves, meaning total cover or a British June. Clouds have a system of classification that mirrors that of animals. They are divided into 10 main types, or genera, which is the plural form of genus. These genera can be divided further into species. For instance, one genus is stratus, which means that the cloud is very flat and covering the sky. Think of the sky on any day in Britain from January to about mid-June. When the stratus is the species nebulosus, it means that there is a stratus cloud which is really undefined and suspicious. Think of a particularly miserable day in November with poor visibility who is giving us nothing. There is a special group of clouds called special clouds, which are generated by some form of localised activity, such as the plumes from power stations or the smoke from forest fires or volcanoes. The latter clouds have the suffix flammogenitus attached to their name. For example, a voluminous chunky cloud from a forest fire may be called cumulus congestus flammogenitus, otherwise known as me after Taco Bell. The trail from a plane is a cloud called cirrus homogenitus, as opposed to ones who are joking. If you've ever seen a waterfall, you may have seen a beautiful, fine cloud of droplets coming from the flume, maybe with a little rainbow in it. Not sure who decided that that lovely cloud deserved to be called Stratus Cataract Genitus. Absolute shambles. What about clouds that glow at night? Noctilucent clouds can be spotted on otherwise clear nights in the areas close to the poles. They form in the second highest layer of the atmosphere and consist of tiny ice crystals, giving the cloud an icy blue glow as sunlight passes through it. Although they are seen near both the North and South poles, the Met Office website that I got this information from puts the reduced number of southern sightings down to nobody being there to see them. I guess. If you want your cloud to look even more like a sign of alien activity, you are in luck. Lenticular clouds are so named because they look like a lens or a saucer, a flying saucer. They form downwind of mountain ranges and are usually accompanied by the kind of turbulence that would get the pilot of a small-powered aircraft worried. Disclaimer. We tried to contact a small-powered aircraft pilot to confirm this. It was impossible to get anything out of him because he was 3'6" and whirring like a little whippet. The aircraft was unavailable for comment. And now, a update on our main story tonight from Storm Petrel.
Well, Chris, there have been significant developments here over the past hour or so, with a large gathering of what appears to be chickens on the roof of the Endpoint Hotel. Reasons are still unclear as to why the chickens crossed the bridge. An eyewitness I spoke to reported that it was to get to the other side, so I punched him in the throat.
Thank you, Storm. Sorry. Just getting reports from external sources that two figures have been spotted among the chickens. One is confirmed to be a woman known locally as the Host, a maniac, said to be plagued with visions of the long-deceased proprietor of the Grasshopper Jazz Club, Miss Grasshopper Warbler. Her condition is said to have arisen following a radioactive goose bite sustained at Highfields Park Lake. The other figure is you.
We're safe on this island. I trapped her on the other side so she can't get back to her haunting ground. That's where she has the most power, you see. There are more things in heaven and earth than I dreamt of in your philosophy. But there are some things in both. Like the weather.
There are two directions in which you could take space weather. The first is the weather in the very highest part of our atmosphere, which occurs as a result of the sun chucking everything at us you'd care to name, such as magnetic fields, electromagnetic radiation, particles, and bits of matter. These include geomagnetic storms, which are rapid variations in the Earth's magnetic field caused by a coronal mass ejection. This is when a very strong solar wind reaches the Earth's magnetic field and causes the field to oscillate. A rapidly changing magnetic field can induce an electric current, which in turn will have its own associated magnetic field. In this way, the effect of the coronal mass ejection gets amplified. It's a perfect time to talk about this. Because according to our good friends at the Met Office, there's a geomagnetic storm due at some point between midnight tonight and midnight tomorrow. So, what may happen? Well, the storm coming up is classified as a G3, which is sort of medium strength. The grading system goes from G1 to G5. Completely harmless to humans, but may mess with devices using low radio frequencies and cause voltage alarms on power systems. Another effect associated with geomagnetic storms is the strong presence of aurora. Aurora occur when the energy in particles carried by the coronal mass ejection get diverted to the poles by the shape of the Earth's magnetic field. These particles are mostly oxygen or nitrogen, which are charged when they arrive at the Earth's atmosphere. They bump into gas particles in our atmosphere, causing the charged particles to get excited. When the charged particles come down from being excited, they emit photons of visible light. Oxygen particles emit lower energy photons of red and green light. Nitrogen particles emit higher energy photons of blue or purple light. We see this on the ground as the aurora borealis or aurora australis, depending on whether you're near the north or south pole. Auroras are not exclusive to Earth, having also been spotted on Jupiter and Saturn. Let's spin this around and take space weather in the second direction, whether you want to or not. It's time for the weather on other planets. To explore this further, you're going to have to bear the brunt of a brand new podcast segment. Welcome to What's That Raining on Me Head? The easy guide to finding out what planet you're on just from the projectiles falling from the sky and into your skull. Note the word into. Is the rain hard with glittering flecks of red and blue? Then you are on a gas giant exoplanet called HAT-P7b. How you ended up 1,000 light years away from home on a planet named after Elon Musk's next child, I will never know. The planet appears to be shrouded in clouds containing corundum, which is the mineral that both rubies and sapphires are formed from. These could well form and fall as rain, since the planet has an ambient temperature of about 2,500 degrees Celsius, classified by our secret lovers at the Met Office as a bit stuffy. Does the glitter of the rain have that certain allure that comes with something expensive? You are most likely on Neptune, where the carbon in the atmosphere has been squashed into diamond rain. This rain is the ultimate drip, but your style may be cramped by the other local weather conditions. If anyone asks, it wasn't you, it was just the powerful gusts of methane wind breaking the sound barrier with a sonic boom. Does the place have the vibe of a sketchy nightclub, except the air conditioning is so deeply broken that the object you're being glassed with is melting? Well, you are unfortunate enough to live on a blue world 63 light years away named HD189733b. You're living in a right dump that sounds like a fax machine, where the atmosphere is hot as molten lava and the rain is molten glass raining sideways at your face with the wind going at 5,000 miles an hour. That is 500 times as fast as a domestic pig, and you still want to sit there in your ill-fitting jeans with your hair that makes you look like Rod Stewart rubbed dirt and Quaker oats into his fringe and pretend that you're having a good time? With that cup of methylated spirits in your hand to boot? Get out. Students, eh? They think anything's a good night out. And finally, do you have sulfuric acid on your head and trousers? Well, you're on Venus. You're on fire. It's your desire. What a funny evening this has been. I hope you can swim, because that's the only way back home from the Endpoint Hotel. Unfortunately, it's time to say goodbye to you and our beloved life partners at the Met Office for now. We will reunite this autumn and continue our adventures through science and strangeness, mark my words. See you on the other side. Disclaimer. I am fine and well. I didn't get my Miles swimming badge when I was 12 for nothing. Also, a big hello to our friends at the Circumventing Podcast.